Sounds like we're all about to dissolve into something. I don't know exactly what, but it's just sort of we've risen and then we're just going to dissolve into the ether.
That was Kamala Harris's potential competition.
Lacou Music is the music we heard, the multi-generational collective of Haitian musicians performing at the Clark in Williamstown on Wednesday. That is tomorrow for those of you keeping score at home. You can see the playlist posted online at wamc.org/roundtable, and a delight to have you all with us this morning. What a day. Yesterday was a day. It was a weekend. We had a lot going on, and we have more to talk about. And we'll do so with again, a terrific panel. I said this last week, and I just want to reiterate this point. We have, in these dire moments and moments of great, I think, peril, but also of great interest and great political and social complexity, we have been able to get these amazing groups of individuals with us. And I just thank each and every one of them from the bottom of my heart to come in and share with us. And they're the absolute best. And I just so appreciate their efforts and having them come in and share with us. So with that, let me introduce the group today, and we'll get started and talk about what is going on. We welcome Fran Berman to the program. Fran is the Stuart Rice Honorary Chair at the University of Massachusetts Amherst College of Information and Computer Sciences, Faculty Associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. One of just the most buoyant and joyous of spirits, and I am thrilled to have you on the phone line this morning. How are you?
Well, I am definitely joyous today. It's like a very, very good day. And even though you said you love the people that come in, and I have not come in, I am going to come in August with the girl posse. So yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, this is a show, by the way, Mark and Judy, I just want you to know this. This was like a bunch of panelists got together and just planned their own day. So that was... They got an overthrow going. They met. They took notes. There's, I think, Robert's rules of order were brought in. No, it's great. It's fantastic. But by the way, Fran, just so you know, in the world of radio, you're still like people don't know you're here. You're in the show.
Oh yeah.
It isn't like you don't have to be in.
I'm in the studio.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I'm very happy that you are here as always, and we welcome you. All right. We also welcome Vice President for Editorial Development of the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick. Judy, good morning. How are you?
I am fine and happy to be here.
Yes, good to have you here. We also welcome. Is Jay on the phone yet? Did we have Jay? I think we lost Jay, and then is Jay there? Okay, we may have Jay. Jay Jochnowitz is with us, a semi-retired editor-at-large, a columnist, editorial writer at the Times Union. Jay, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. That was touch and go for a second. I have new earbuds, and I double-tapped them, which disconnected me, and frantically called back, and I'm back online, so I'm well, thank you.
Good to have you here. Thank you very much for joining in on the fun. We also welcome Mark Whitman, Wall Street investment banker. Again, brought cool donuts this week. Last week was what? Burgers. We had the burgers and the like the 4th of July theme.
Burger donuts?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I have pictures. And this week it's Christmas in July. It's very cool. Sorry you're missing this, Fran and Jay. Also
yeah.
tragedy.
Good morning.
Judy can eat my donuts.
There you go. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. I'm better than I was last week.
Yeah, good. Well, we'll get into that. And then, let's see, George is here, Mark's son, George. And George, how are you?
I'm good. I have a donut, and I don't have COVID, unlike some people.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's good. That's true. It's going around. Yeah, it's going around and hitting the building again, but that's okay. We're here, and we're good to see everybody, and welcome, welcome, welcome. All right, let's go to what's going on in the world, and we welcome you. If you'd like to join us, all you have to do is write to us. We're not going to do phone-in today. No call-ins, so don't get that in your mind. It's panel at WAMC.org. I think I can only do that once a week or once a year. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And thank you very much for going to that form of communication, and we look forward to hearing from you in just a moment. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's get started and talk about what is happening in the world. So, of course, we know the big news yesterday was the leaving of the race by President Joe Biden on the Democratic ticket, and then turning his support to Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris, now the news seems to be, and is, the fact that here is a candidate who in the last 36 hours has made over $100 million, mostly in small donations. And also has secured enough delegates to capture the nomination, as well as receive support from most of the Democratic Party. So I think that it is now, who knows? I had this horrible moment, Mark, yesterday where I was driving home from seeing Sammy Hagar in Loverboy last night, and I was listening to and that was the one horrible moment. But the second horrible moment was the I was listening to cable news, and they said, "We haven't seen an enthusiastic introduction like this since Sarah Palin." And I was like, oh man. Oh, wow. That's not great. The money's flowing. The energy is there. She's hitting the trail. She is out there, and a lot is going on. We heard from President Biden yesterday on the phone, still apparently under the weather, but he was there in Delaware virtually by telephone. And he was saying, look, I won't be on the ticket, but I fully support Kamala Harris. And it's a great honor to have her in my stead. So that was basically the big news yesterday. And now what can happen? Mark, go ahead.
Well, Joel, a lot has certainly happened. I think it's worth starting by mentioning that I'm going to remain seated and offer Biden a golf clap. Conceding the inevitable on Sunday is not the same as demonstrating leadership. That opportunity was about 18 months ago. And may, you know, if Kamala loses, or if, put another way, if Trump wins the White House, Biden's legacy will still be tarnished by the fact that he held on for so long. I want to preface my comments about VP Harris by saying I would be perfectly comfortable with her as president. I'm less comfortable with her as a candidate. I think historically the Democrats have been too deferential to VPs, and I think particularly in this cycle they've lacked courage and creativity. A contest for the presidential nomination would have provided some inter-party scrutiny, valuable attention, which you would have taken away from Trump, and added to Kamala Harris's legitimacy. Unfortunately, Nancy Pelosi apparently, if you listen very carefully to the talking heads that are Democratic insiders. You know, Nancy Pelosi knew what the answer was. There are roughly 4,700 delegates. You got to whip them. And she and her folks are a master at that. And frankly, it seems like they did it before the starting gun, frankly, even fired. And now to invite competition, you know, would be like inviting a tourist in Grand Central to play Three Carmani. I mean, it's you're not going to win.
Right. Now, but the interesting part of that, I think, is, isn't it, Mark, that even with that, that there seemed to be so much division and question that when you look back on it over the last 3 weeks, the only thing really that wasn't going, let's say, Nancy Pelosi or the Democrats' way was the fact that Joe Biden wasn't fast enough in saying, I'm going to get out.
I think that's right. Actually, I've been thinking about this a lot. I actually think Joe Biden's insistence in staying in so long is another really strong argument for term limits, not with respect to the president, but all the Democratic politicians who decided to sort of stay under the ramparts because they didn't want to lose their career by picking the wrong side. Had they had less to lose, not careers to lose, but one or two terms to lose, I think they would have been much more forceful, much more quickly. Now, the one counter argument that perhaps the counteraction reports may tell us is maybe Pelosi and Schumer figured it out that the key to getting Biden out was to do it softly first, as opposed to confront him directly in mass. So there's a, I don't know, and I'll leave that to history to decide. But I worry that the incentive system is just perverse. And look at it on the Republican side. There's an analog here, which is first they tried to keep their head down with respect to Donald Trump and didn't say what they should have to reject him from the party. And now they've all come back and bent the knee to preserve their careers. I do think if you look at both sides of the aisle, sort of the behavior around protecting the party from bad leadership suggests that these folks' incentive is misaligned. But there we are.
So let me ask you, I'm interested in your thoughts overall, Judy, but just the fact of this idea of coalescing. Democrats are notorious for and a history of this circular firing squad. And it seems that we're using this idea of a coronation or of unity within the party behind one candidate as in some quarters a negative, isn't that good? I mean, I understand that you want democracy. I understand it would be good to have go up against, but my God, we only have 104 days.
You know, irony of irony is Mike Johnson suggesting that the democratic process, the democratic process was violated in this selection of Kamala Harris. The bottom line is, any number of reasons could have affected Joe Biden's decision to drop out. And typically, there's a process for in New York State, there used to be something called the Committee on Vacancies that would replace someone if they dropped out or dropped dead in the middle of a campaign. So there's a process there. I love, you know, Democrats are on this high right now that, you know, and everybody's very enthusiastic and hopeful again. Whether or not they can sustain it is the big question. One of the takeaways I had yesterday was that Biden's campaign was failing. I mean, in large part, it was Joe Biden. He was not an effective messenger, but the message itself was not resonating with the American public. That is why the needle was not moving on the polling numbers at all. They need to rethink their whole message. The fact that democracy is at stake, I do not think that was resonating with people. It resonates with me, but it was not resonating with enough of the American public to make a difference in the polls. So talk about what you're going to do in the future. Talk about real, don't just tell people that the economy is improving because they see at the grocery store that it's not improving for them. So there are messages to be taken. There's momentum that they can build on. From a woman's perspective, it's really interesting because you have this leftover feeling from Hillary Clinton's defeat that look what they did to us back then. And we're not going to let them do that to another woman again by demonizing her for just being a woman.
Let's go to Fran Berman off that. Go, Fran.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to tell you a bunch of things about how I feel, but here's the bottom line. It's go time. Let's not waste any time figuring out how it could have been, how it might have been. This is the time. Every time I look at, you know, Project 2025 or hear the things that he says, or let's just get this guy out of the national consciousness and out of the White House. So it's showtime. And I'm all in. Okay, how do I feel about all of this stuff leading up to it? I will tell you, actually, sincerely and candidly to a gazillion people out there in Radio Land, I've been really thinking about whether I want to still be a Democrat. I have been so discouraged by the fact that my party was not taking the keys away from somebody who really isn't able to drive. I mean, all of us who've had aging parents in that situation know how difficult it is. And for all of us who will become aging parents, we know how much we want to keep the kids. But so it took a really long time to do that. If we had done this a year ago, we could have done a lot of the vetting that I think would have made many of us much more comfortable. And we would have had the town halls and we would have worked stuff out. And I understand how difficult this must have been for President Biden. I was in D.C. last week for a bunch of stuff, a bunch of meetings with folks in the government. And a lot of people said, you know, this is the, everybody else saw the Joe Biden we've been seeing for quite a while in the debate. But this is where he's been at. And as people have known that, they didn't take the keys away. And so that's made me feel like, you know me, Fran, public interest here, that the Democrats, really, do they have the public interest in mind? Anyway, that's what I was thinking as of before. And now I feel like there's this huge influx of energy. Yeah, we could have done some vetting before, but we have a solid candidate. We have a candidate with extraordinary amount of energy. And I'll tell you the thing that really impressed me about Kamala is that she spent like, less than a femtosecond thinking, hey. And then she got her act together. She's got the delegates. She's talked to the people in out in the field. She's assembling her team. She's figuring out vice president. She's got Eric Holder on the job. She hasn't wasted any time doing that, and that's leadership. And leadership is what I'm looking for. So, it's you know, for the first time in a long time, I've been feeling hopeful, and it's an unusual thing to feel and very welcome. So I'm just watching and enjoying, and I'm all in. It's go time.
Jay Jochnowitz.
I was getting impatient, too. I mean, this did feel inevitable that Biden would have to drop out. But, we're 104 days away. This, delay in many ways is a blip on the political radar. There is so much that is going to happen and can happen in the next 104 days that I'm not really worried about this. I tell you, I liked Harris back in the last, two elections ago. My only real issue with her is purely stylistic, which unfortunately is a lot of presidential races nowadays. There are people that feel she talks down a bit, and I think she is plagued. And this is very personal for me, by what I call the executive nod of consensus. She cannot stop bumping her head when she's talking and telling you that, you know, she's hypnotizing you into agreeing with her. And I've worked with people like this. It is, for those of us who are aware of it, it is extremely annoying. But other than that, I think she is well equipped to take this case to take the race to Trump, to take the case to Trump. And she's articulate. She's being a former prosecutor. She's got all the messages that need to be made here in terms of, you know, the prosecutor versus the felon, the woman versus the misogynist, the guy who took abortion rights away, nationally anyway, and so on. The thing is that, you know, there's going to be a scramble, and this is, you know, this is the timing thing. There's going to be a scramble in the next few days to define her. It's whether she gets to define herself and come out with, you know, as Fran was just talking about, a very, you know, clear, articulate message, both on Trump as well as what she would do and what the Biden administration has done, and avoid allowing the Trump campaign to define her. So I think those are the two big challenges right now, not worrying about, you know, how long this took to get here.
Go ahead.
And she has a bit of an advantage, too, because she doesn't face a primary, so she doesn't have to cater to, like, the left wing or the extremes of the Democratic Party, and she can focus on appealing to the middle of America.
Well, that's a good point, yep. George. I mean, it's very rare that you have a candidate who isn't the incumbent, who comes into the race without being bloodied by the primaries and being battered around. That'll come in time. We don't have to worry about that, do we? We'll be back. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have a lot of good letters. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Fran Berman, Jay Jochnowitz, Judy Patrick, and Mark Whitman all together. George is here as well, and we welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'd love to hear what is on your mind as well. We have letters. Let's go to a few of them. First of all, we have this one that says, Fran is spot on. It is go time. That is from E. And then we also have another one from Ruth. Fran just said some of this for me. Can we please stop trashing Joe Biden now? Why spend time critiquing the past and talk instead about what's coming? We finally have unity. Why talk about the circular firing squad? Let's shut up about what might have happened. There's 4 years to change how the party operates. In the meantime, we're facing Project 2025 and Trump 2. Let's not waste any more words on Biden. We all know what happened. Stop rehashing and talk about Harris's candidacy. And now, by the way, Democrats are free to attack Trump's age and health and patently obvious dementia and mental illnesses without whataboutism.
I think it's totally fine to keep talking about Biden because somebody on that campaign team made the decision to let him debate Donald Trump. Let's find out who did that, because that was a huge mistake.
Well, and not for nothing. Just I will offer this as a little asterisk, a little side note. He's still the president.
Yeah, and
let's not forget that.
I do think Vice President Harris has to be careful. There are some folks who are a part of Biden's campaign, not to mention names like Ron Klain, who need to be not within a state of the White House from now until the end of time, given his past performance. Nate Silver said something really interesting. He said, you know, when you have a dead draw, and all of a sudden you've got a chance, the cards turn and you have a chance, there is necessarily a euphoric feeling, and I think we're all feeling that. And I must say I'm a part of it. And certainly if you look at the manufactured groundswell of support and all the funding, everything looks good. But and it's true, I think it's great that Kamala Harris is capable of taking on Donald Trump physically and mentally. The one issue I have, and Judy, I think it's clear she got a running start, but if you look at the two biggest issues that matter most to Americans, it's the economy and it's the border. and particularly on the economy. And I'd actually challenge our listeners, if I may, Joe. I'd love to hear the three-sentence retort from the Democrats to Donald Trump's and others' criticism of Biden's handling of the economy. Harris can't differentiate herself or separate herself enough from the administration, and she's got to come up with two really good counters that I haven't heard yet. And that's, to me, once the euphoria settles down and they start tagging her with the economy and the border again. And remember, you know, she lacks charisma, she lacks time, and she's at best an inconsistent communicator. This is a tough road for her ahead.
And in my opinion,
you know, I disagree with that. I don't think she lacks charisma. I think she has charisma. And I think, yeah, she's going to have to explain these things. But, you know, any candidate would. So I have a question for George, actually, if that's okay.
Yes.
And my question for George is, because, you know, let's talk about the future here. What excites you about Kamala Harris?
I mean, I feel like just the contrast she draws to Trump, the felon versus the prosecutor. And then you also get the black woman versus misogynist, as Joe said earlier. I just feel like the contrast may be entertaining or good to some Americans who weren't particularly excited to vote between two old senile white men.
Okay.
Potentially senile.
Thank you, George.
Potentially senile.
So it's kind of what she represents, at least as for you, kind of what she represents, at least as much as her responses about, you know, these sort of various issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Let's go to ahead, Jay. I'm sorry.
I was just going to point out that to the point that you know, she needs to have at least two things to counter the criticism. I think she's got them ready made. She just has to articulate them well, and they both stem from the same thing on immigration. That one, she can point to Donald Trump as a person who cynically sabotaged bipartisan legislation that would have addressed a lot of the concerns that have been out there at the border about the border, and two, that they had a bipartisan solution. So on the one hand, you paint Donald Trump as a saboteur of that very of the solution to the very issue that he wants to make the center of his campaign, which is as just cynically political as it gets. And also say, and yes, we have a solution, and we're going to put that solution forward, and we're going to work on even more solutions. I think she's got it right there if she can just articulate it clearly, which does not sound that hard to do to me.
Let's go to a bunch of letters. Marcy says, I'm sorry, it's Mike who says, I don't know how Democrats haven't gotten this message. Almost anyone could have beaten Trump. People specifically voted against Hillary because she was A, an insider, and B, was derisive of blue-collar America or was perceived as such. I'm sure that implicit or overt sexism played a role on some people's votes, but why bring attention to that while ignoring the real reasons? And she got where she did because the Democratic Party rammed her through, even if you don't believe that too many people do, for her to even have won. That is from Mike. Then we go to Carolyn. A couple of thoughts about the mini primary idea. Apparently the only person able to access all of the funds that the Biden-Harris campaign had already raised was Kamala Harris. So any winner of a mini primary would be starting with zero with 104 days to go. Also, all the churn over the last few weeks was just as problematic as Biden's issues. I'm so happy to move on from that and let VP Harris move forward with campaigning. I agree with Fran. It is go time. Then,
so this is the most positive feedback I've ever gotten. So thank you, Radio Land.
Well, be careful. The show's not over. Jill
no
says,
death threat, yeah.
Jill says,
Go ahead, Jay. I was just going to say, they raised an interesting point. So, you know, on the silly side, you know, Trump is out there and his campaign is out there crying foul about the terrible thing that's been done to all the primary voters who picked Joe Biden, and now, you know, they've been deprived of their champion. I mean, you know, I cannot say it on the air, but it starts with bull. But the more serious aspect of that is, I think there is still an argument to be that's being made out there about whether Harris is entitled to the funds from the Biden-Harris campaign. That, you know, and there's all sorts of legal nuances to that. I think that the Trump campaign is going to pursue that very vigorously to deprive her of as much money as they can. So that is still out there, but the lawyers will figure that one out.
Robert says, yeah, that's it, Joe. You can't wait to knock down Harris with the Sarah Palin comment. You're not even aware when you do it. I don't think I'm just this has become one of my pet peeves. When we say something that has been reported, or we say something that, as I indicated, was something that a CNN commentator said on my way back from the Loverboy show, that I am just reporting what I heard. I'm not endorsing it. I am not saying I agree with it. I am just saying that after all of this good stuff, this was the comment that came out of the radio that I was listening to at that moment. I'm not knocking down anyone. I am just reporting that there are those who are, and I assume that in most cases the audience can differentiate that. Yes, friend.
Well, let's get serious about this. Sarah Palin was a train wreck, as are other people, as is, you know, Kennedy. You know, there are lots of people of all genders who are train wrecks, but Sarah Palin was a first. And, well, I'm not sure what she was a first, actually, as VP. I think maybe she was a second. But anyway, it was a noteworthy thing. And so Sarah Palin got a lot of attention, and people who were happy about that gave a lot of money. That's truth. Whether you think she's a train wreck or not, and many of us think she's a train wreck, that's the truth. She was a very noteworthy choice, and it got a reaction.
All right. Let's see. Thomas says, I totally disagree with your panelists that the message that democracy writ large is in danger does not resonate with the voters. For me and others I talk to, that is far and away the single most important issue of all. I also agree with your listener who just said that you are spending too much time rehashing the past. I'm with Lady Macbeth. What's done cannot be undone. Look forward a bit.
The existential crisis that the Democrats claim we face, and the assertion that that's where we are, was belied by their inability to speak out against Biden's candidacy. I found that incredibly ironic. I mean, either it's true and they should have been screaming from the rooftops, or it wasn't and they belonged where they were, which is looking out for their own political back ends. But again, I think it's right to sort of move forward in the way we look. I actually think the Palin comment, Joe, I think there's always – the reason I think that resonated in part was I agree. Of course Kamala Harris is a serious, capable presidential candidate. Yeah, and as I said, I think she's probably better president than she is a presidential candidate. But the one issue that joke underscores is that we're now in the euphoria stage. And as we look ahead, I think we do need to seriously ask, what is this candidate, what does the party need to do to beat Donald Trump? And I think they're doing many of the mechanical things that Judy mentioned. I think the issue is, as Jay mentioned, around messaging the border. I think that's the easy one. I think the economy is sadly the most important and the most difficult, and I haven't heard that yet. And if they were getting a running start towards 4,700 delegates, I would have hoped they would have also gotten a running start towards a pithy counter to the economic argument that's going to be the most central argument to the rest of this campaign.
But this is why, in my opinion, they shouldn't have put the vice president as the next president, because if it's somebody who wasn't in office when all the things that they're saying about all the problems happened, they could say just, it wasn't me. But Kamala can't wave that wand, and now she has to come up with retorts for stuff that she shouldn't have to.
Yeah, but this is a place, I agree, George, actually, but this is a place where I think One of my biggest discouragements about Biden, who I think honestly did a fine job as president, did a great job as president, and I think that's like the world's hardest job. But one of my discouragements about him is he did a bad job of raising the next generation of successive leadership. He did a bad job of grooming Kamala in the public eye by giving her doable problems, by, you know, promoting her, by letting us get to know her a little bit as a leader. He did the same with all the rest of the folks, with, you know, the governors, Buttigieg, you know, all of the kinds of people that you would expect for us to have a deep bench. Imagine this was different. You know, imagine this was a year ago. We had a deep bench of people we would think, oh, this person could be president, or that person could be president, and that we had some sort of more fair competition. That would have been, in the ideal, what I would have liked. But that's not where we are. He didn't do that. He did a lot of really great things. That's not one of the great things he did. And by the way, I don't see Trump, you know, creating a succession plan either. So a lot of people don't do that. And unfortunately, and I think, you know, we're where we are. But it's go time. So let's revel in this. Let's get the strongest possible argument. Let's not waste any time or any effort in just trying to win in November, because this is not just having Trump win is not just having someone who has a different sort of philosophical approach than you do. Having Trump win is having someone who is willing to pull out the stops to make this a really different kind of a country. I think a country that even a lot of his supporters really don't want to live in. And it's a guy who's going to be, take down everybody who's been against him. It's a guy who's going to amass power. It's a guy who's going to just really be for himself. And it's not a country I think we should be living in. So it's go time. I'm happy for any kind of reasonable response to that.
Can I make a point about democracy as an issue? Oh, sorry, Jay.
Yeah. Democracy and then Jay.
So democracy is an abstract concept that that particularly swing voters have proven in the polling is not resonating. I'm just saying diehard liberals who are buying, who see the danger that Donald Trump poses, of course are adhering to that. But I'm saying that this abstract concept is not something that's going to win the votes of swing voters. And that's what Kamala Harris needs in order to win those swing votes.
Jay.
Yeah, I do think that I think that's right to a point. I think that, you know, you can take that argument back very simply to the January 6th insurrection, riot, coup attempt, you know, whatever any number of characterizations will do, and simply paint them as a lawless, undemocratic person. And I think that's all she really needs to do. If you get into the complexities, you know, we did that in an editorial, if you get into the complexities of Project 2025 and you start, you know, he'll just disavow he has anything to do with it. And there's an argument to be made that maybe he does have some distance to it. So I think it just turns into a mess. But I think a very simple message about, you know, this guy's a criminal, he's an insurrectionist, takes care of that. I think the economy, to Mark's point, is a big challenge. And I think you're right that Biden and all the Democrats I've listened to over the last few months, nobody seems to be able to really get into the complexity of the legislation that has passed over the last 3 years. And a good candidate needs to be able to break it down to say, here is what we have done in little bites, not, you know, I think one of the things bogging Biden down was in the debate, partly, was he was trying to say too much at once because there is so much to say about what he's done on his watch. He has done some extraordinary things as president. It's just they are a part of such a big program that it's hard to give it to people in small bites. So he needs to explain. She needs to explain that. And she needs to have a positive message about what's been accomplished without being Pollyannish about it and without overlooking the fact that a lot of people don't feel that way on a personal level. So what are you going to do about housing? What are you going to do about, if you can, what are you going to do about prices? You know, and you can talk about what Trump's tariff ideas are going to do to prices even worse. That's one way to get at that. But, yeah, it's a very complicated message, and she's going to have to figure out how to break it down so she doesn't just throw it at you all at once and you just go, oh, I just like, you know, gas prices were low when Trump was president. That resonates with me. You know, something like that.
Let's do a couple more letters, and then we'll take a news break at the top of the hour. Flora says, last week after the assassination attempt on Mr. Trump, there was a cry for civility in our political discourse. Please note that yesterday, Republican Ohio State Senator George Lang at the first J.D. Vance rally called for a civil war if Trump loses the election in November. Please throw civility out the window. Dems need to take the gloves off, stop with the kumbaya, and fight to win. So if they go low, you go lower, I guess.
I think there's a difference between taking your glove off. For instance, I was disappointed when the Democrats didn't respond to Republican criticisms of this quote-unquote coronation. Somebody should have said, you know, we'll check out January 6th if you want to see what the Republicans really think about democracy. There should have been quick rejoinders offered to that. I think that kind of gloves off is fine. Obviously, calling for or implying violence is inappropriate. Yes. And I think, frankly, there's a clear distinction between the two parties. The Democrats have done almost none of that on a national scale, and the Republicans make a steady diet of it, sadly.
Let's go to this letter from Jill, who says, I do believe that the timing ended up being perfect for Biden to bow out. Had this occurred prior to the RNC, perhaps the VP pick would have been different. I think we finally Trump. Lastly, the VP pick for Harris is very important. All things that you have were saying to me just moments ago, Judy.
Yeah, Jill, great letter, because in some respects, I almost think that it was planned, that they were going to let Trump, who was so arrogant to think he had this thing locked in, that he was going to pick the most radical VP and not care and cruise into a victory in November. They let him do it, and now he's stuck with Vance. And Vance, in this first foray out into the field, did not do so well last night. He does not have the charisma that I thought he would have as on the campaign trail. Let's see how he does going forward. But yeah, the timing was such that at one point I thought it would have been great if they just interrupted the RNC and took all that attention away from them, Republicans. But this was a good choice.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll continue our conversation after this news break on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. Fran Berman, Jay Jochnowitz, Judy Patrick, Mark Whitman, George is here as well. And we welcome you, panel@wamc.org. And we thank you for being with us this morning. Let's go to some panel letters. And Ann said, I had to laugh. The panelist saying he is annoyed by Harris supposedly talking down to people. White male politicians don't do that. Every single one of them, always mansplaining. Men don't like a woman who knows what she's talking about. Recognize your misogyny. Then we go to Marcy.
Well, in my defense,
yes,
I'm plagued by the same problem Joe was talking about. That on that point, I was talking about what I have heard people say about a feeling that she talks down to people. So saying that I've heard this is not the same as saying I believe it. On the nod of executive nod of consensus, that is entirely my I've copyrighted that trademarked that saying, by the way, that phrase.
Yes, good.
And I do think she's plagued by it.
Good on you. All right, let's go to other letters. This one goes to from Steve. Can you discuss, now that we have a sitting president who isn't seeking re-election, who has total immunity and legal protections for official presidential acts thanks to the SCOTUS ruling, and he's not encumbered by the pesky re-election electoral concerns? What do you want us to discuss?
Yeah, he's sitting in the catbird seat, but I think that he has enough integrity not to do the horribly bad things that he could do and get away with it at this point. Will he pardon his son, for example? Good question. You know, my issue at this point is, how much will Joe Biden be out on the campaign trail in support of Kamala Harris, or will he stay back in the White House? What is the best thing for her candidacy?
Anne writes,
I kind of think that if we're really doing the full court press, everybody ought to be out there. All the governors ought to be out there. He ought to be out there. Every Beyonce ought to be out there. Every single Taylor Swift ought to be out there. Every single person who thinks this is a good idea ought to be out there, because there's some tiny part of some constituency somewhere for whom that will be meaningful. I really do think this is a high-risk, high-reward situation. And if you really want to try to get the reward, and there's going to be lots of challenges, you get everybody out there. And that includes Biden. And if Biden were Trump, I'm just making this up because I don't actually know. We haven't done the experiment. But if Biden were Trump, he would spend the last 3 months making things as difficult as possible. That's what Trump would do. Biden has a little bit more latitude, as you point out, Judy. Whether he does that or not, I don't know. And I'm not even sure what I would advocate. But, yeah, I think everybody ought to be out there.
Anybody else?
Right. Yeah, and they can't make the mistake of 2016. No matter how good her polling numbers get, if they do get, that strong, they can't make the mistake that Clinton made, which was playing this game as if every vote didn't count and the swing states were locked up and all that. And I don't think they're going to make that mistake again. I don't think they'll repeat 2016.
I
think they've got to treat this like every day is a battle to win it.
I don't think the polling numbers are ever going to tempt them like that.
No, probably not.
All right, let's move back to other letters for a moment, and we go to Michael. It's not okay to make offensive remarks about anyone based on their race, gender, or age. That is wrong for the obvious reasons. Except it seems that on WAMC, it's okay to express a bias towards old white men. And when the rest of the panel laughs about it, that contributes to the divisiveness in our country. There are millions of Americans in their 80s and 90s, including some who are men, and including all races, with very sharp minds. Racial prejudices should be called out and not encouraged. President Biden's problem is not his age or his race or gender. It is his failing cognitive abilities. Old white man is not relevant.
I'm sorry, I'm talking so much today. Can I just say I really agree with that? I think part of the problem for me with this country is that we just make these giant generalizations and we decide everybody in X is good and everybody and not X is good. Young is better than old. Male is better than or is worse or better than female. Black is worse or better than white. We have to stop that. There are individuals in these groups who we admire. There are individuals in these groups that we don't admire. I think with Biden, it's not that he's an old white guy. There's lots of old white guys who are doing their jobs really well. I think for him, his infirmities, have begun to get in the way. And, you know, that kind of pushes him over a line in terms of really having a lot of confidence with him as president. It's not necessarily because he's old. It's not necessarily because he's white. It's not necessarily because he's male. It's because, I think, as the writer says, he's increasingly infirm. And this is the worst and most stressful job in the universe. And I think that puts us a bit behind the eight ball. And now we have someone who's seemingly extremely healthy, who's seemingly excited and enthusiastic and, you know, pulling together a lot of strength. That's good. Trump has the same problem. I mean, besides being, and I am not a professional in this, crazy, Trump is not necessarily the world's healthiest guy or certainly the most capable of being president. And that makes a big difference.
Let's go to Denise, who says, thank you for the discussion this morning. Would it be possible to speak more about Kamala's voting record in the Senate and her record as district attorney? Would it be possible for the panel to discuss the accomplishments of the Biden administration in a concise and thorough manner? Well, I think you're asking for something that probably takes time and preparation, but is there anyone who would like, Jay, perhaps, would you like to address the letter?
Well, on the latter part, I think there's a lot that can be done, and could I address it concisely? I think that's actually Harris's job, not mine, but it will be mine. It might be mine at some point if I'm writing an editorial of endorsement later on. And I think, Joe, you're right. It does take time and preparation to really, you know, get the breadth of it. And as I was saying before, I am, you know, like a lot of people, I feel kind of, you know, dazed, not dazzled, but dazed by the breadth of what Biden has accomplished, to the point that I don't know that I could pin down any one thing. But all right, so that's all by way of preliminaries. He has done a great deal to further to get this country on a clean energy road and integrate that into a program of investment in, you know, well into the hundreds of billions in future investment in jobs related to that, you know, essentially starting to transform this country in a way that has not been done to date, from the post-industrial economy that we've relied on to an economy based on green energy. I think that's probably the biggest accomplishment, and I think it will be paying dividends for decades.
Jack,
Joe, if I may, the FT had a great article today about
Financial Times, for those of you not.
Yes, sorry, about Kamala Harris's views and how, in some cases, they differ from Biden's. On foreign policy, she certainly has been more critical not only of Netanyahu but of the Israeli pursuit of the war. She called for a ceasefire much sooner. On the economic front, she seems pretty well aligned with him and has been very critical of him being Biden, and been very critical of the tariffs that Trump has proposed, which would be dangerous for this economy. On abortion, she's not encumbered by Catholic religion, or by being a Catholic like Biden is, and so she's been far more vocal about women's reproductive rights, and she probably will pursue that far more aggressively, not only as a woman, but somebody who doesn't share Biden's religious views. On law and order, it gets a little more complicated. Historically, she was very tough on crime in California, even eventually calling for the death penalty. Since being a part of the administration and post-George Floyd, she's promulgated the ability to more easily prosecute police officer or police misconduct, and she's aligned herself sort of more leftward, if you will, on the crime and punishment issues. But that, I think, if you, again, referring back to the Financial Times, they put a pretty worthwhile summary of her views and how they do and don't differ from Biden's.
Let's go to this letter from Jack. I don't care if Harris is a cross between Mother Teresa and Rosa Parks. She ain't going to beat the fascist. She's been crowned by the elite, as was Hillary Clinton, and I'm afraid that the result will be the same. I agree with Mark that it should have been an open primary. Yes, I am crying over spilt milk. Spilt. Does not sound right.
Spilt.
And yes, it is a word, but I'm having trouble. Yes, go ahead.
I agree with the letter writer. The one thing is I don't think the result will be the same. I think you do have now an energized Democratic Party, and I think the down-ballot candidates will necessarily benefit from that. But if you look at the betting markets, and they're the best proxy we have because the polls aren't yet sort of reset for Harris truly as a presidential candidate, Biden's still looking at – I'm sorry – Trump is still looking at a 60% chance of winning this thing.
I think, let's go to this letter, which is from Carl. I'd like to see Trump's face, well, not really, but I would like to see his face when Taylor Swift endorses Kamala Harris. Then we go to...
That is the one of
fun
the
to speculate.
One of the advantages of a younger person running for office is it may energize the youth vote and get more of them to actually go to the polls. Historically, they do not turn out like they should. They have notoriously been turned off by this election, and I see a resurgence in that sector coming forward to vote this season.
We have this from Carol, who says, I'm curious, why are we calling her Kamala when Joe has been generally referred to as Biden? Well, first of all, I think Joe has been called Joe a lot. But I understand the point of the letter. I did say this yesterday that I personally tend to use it because on the program yesterday and the week before, so many people were mispronouncing her name. I felt it was sort of our duty to say Kamala so people correctly pronounced it and said it right. But I understand the point. Judy?
Yeah, me too. I routinely in my head consider Donald Trump, I call him the Donald. If you remember, his first wife always
yes.
called him the Donald. I often wonder how many people have named new babies Donald because they're so infatuated with Donald Trump.
We should look it up.
We should look it up.
Shiloh says, my TikTok is absolutely overflowing with enthusiasm for Harris. Gen Z has embraced her as a meme, and the Swifties have organized with an account created yesterday, already up over 20,000 followers. They have a pretty great mission statement and are mobilizing $13 million in donations. That's Taylor's favorite number, don't you know? Harris's team is embracing being a meme, which has ingratiated her even more to the TikTok generation. I haven't seen this kind of excitement since Obama. I know Van Jones.
That is a big darn deal. I mean, I really want to say, if you want to start thinking about the future, and the future is all these people who are going to vote for the next 50 years, this is exactly the group we want energized. And it's the people who are going to inherit the problems that my generation created, the challenges that the world has, the fact that people are engaged, that all of these songwriters and stars and celebs are putting on all these crazy memes on TikTok, and people are excited, and there's mix-ups, and, you know, they take her speech and they take their songs, and that's a big deal. And that speaks to, I mean, that's part of what gives me hope. What gives me hope is it has to be an everybody country. George has to be included. People in their 20s and 30s and 40s, you know, have to feel included. I was talking to my son, my perfect son. All my children are perfect. I just want listeners to know. I was talking to my perfect son the other day, and he's just so discouraged. You know, here's a guy. He has a job that he really cares about. He's a contributing member of society. He's thoughtful. He's smart. He's open-minded. He can't afford a house. You know, he's living in a state where he and his wife are worried about, you know, if she gets pregnant, will she have the full suite of options? You know, this is not a life that we want this generation to be thinking about in a discouraged way. So I am thrilled that the TikTok generation is into this. I just think that's wonderful.
But they need to register to vote. I mean, it's one thing to...
They need to register to vote, and they need to get out there and vote, and they need to get all their friends to vote with them. You know, make it a thing.
Charles,
lock the vote.
Charles,
and the,
yeah, go
and
ahead,
the
Jay.
Campaign, the campaign and its surrogates need to, you know, very quickly, I haven't spoken to my daughter, who is a wonderful bellwether of that generation. They need to get very quickly to the what the Trump people are probably going to try to put out, which is she's just Biden rebooted. You know, it's just more of the same, and she's not going to represent change. They really need to present her. As I said way back at the beginning of this, they need to define her in a way that reinforces that enthusiasm.
Let's see. We go to Gene, who writes, Mark Whitman is your financial man today. And he decries the Democrats' inadequacy at replying to Republican attacks on Bidenomics. So why not ask him how he would respond to those Republican attacks? Currently, he's silently goodbye.
No, you know, the reason I asked for help is because I've had trouble doing this in a very succinct way. If I guess my first attempt would be as follows. I think you first have to say, I feel your pain. So we understand it's been difficult in America. We inherited a terrible economy. Look what happened at the end of the mismanaged period of COVID that Donald Trump was in charge of. We have worked day and night to make things better, not only in the economy broadly, but we've try to reduce your costs for healthcare, particularly for insulin and other medicine. I would enumerate a few of those. And then I would say, and if you look at conditions now, hopefully we believe that help is on its way. But if you elect the other guy, a terrible tariff will plague this nation. And a tariff is nothing but a tax, and a tax on you as a American who spends an important portion of your salary on daily needs as opposed to the rich who don't. And so if you want to see the wealthy continue to thrive and the working people continue to be oppressed by this economy, go ahead and vote for the other guy. That's the best I can come up with, but it's got to be crisper, more condensed. If you remember, you know, just go look back on YouTube at what Clinton did in that town hall style debate with the I Feel Your Pain. Kamala Harris has got to get something like that up and running.
Let's go to this note. We have just a few of these before we go to a news break at the bottom of the hour. Mary says that in the end, Biden played his plan close to the vest and timed his change in candidacy perfectly by waiting for the terrible Republican VP J.D. Vance pick. Biden is old, but not feeble-minded. That from Mary.
Any VP pick that that Trump would have offered would have been terrible because they all have to subscribe to January 6th. The one thing, J.D. Vance puzzles me to no end. Reportedly, the man went to an institution of higher education where people learn, and he is an election denier. So he is either imperceptive or untruthful, and in either case, ineligible. On that very fact, if you don't believe in democracy, I would suggest you not pursue a position of authority within our democracy. Full stop. Anybody Trump would have picked would have been subject to the same criticism, frankly.
Biden's people, writes Bruce, have had the courage to do what Trump enablers would not and could not do to convince their candidate to set his personal interests aside and choose to act in a way that will be best for the party and the nation. It makes me proud to be a registered Democrat. That from Bruce. We go to this letter from Marcy, who says, can the panel please share their thoughts on the current administration's tolerance of Israel's blatant disregard for innocent life in Gaza and what this means for Harris going forward? I was so excited to hear of this changing of the guard until I remembered Gaza. This will be an issue for her with younger voters going forward. Jay? Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Mark Whitman, Judy Patrick, Jay Jochnowitz, and Fran Berman. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We have about 15 minutes or so left with this group. I want to move on to other topics. And, perfect timing. Okay. So I wanted to talk about the Secret Service, the head of the Secret Service, facing bipartisan congressional calls to resign. Yesterday's hearing was really something. I think the head of the House Oversight Committee said it best when he said, we're not a committee that's known for its bipartisanship, and yet today we had it. So moments ago, according to CNN and sources that the Secret Service director has resigned after the Trump assassination attempt, it seems very difficult to believe that Kimberly Cheadle could have survived after yesterday's hearing, where members of Congress on both sides heaped scorn on her for more than four hours with angry questioning and louder bipartisan calls for her to step down because of security failures involving the July 13th assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. James Comer and ranking Democrat Jamie Raskin were among the Congress members who urged Cheadle to resign during the first congressional hearing since the attack on a Trump rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. Today, you failed to provide answers to basic questions regarding that stunning operational failure and to reassure the American people that the Secret Service has learned its lessons and began to correct its systemic blunders and failures, according to the lawmakers who wrote in a letter published after the hearing. In the middle of a presidential election, the committee and the American people demand serious institutional accountability and transparency that you are not providing. The hearing capped a tumultuous period of just over a week during which Trump survived the first direct attack on a U.S. leader in more than 40 years. And embattled President Biden ended his quest for a second term, and Vice President Harris launched her presidential campaign with barely 100 days left before the November election. Both parties are facing an uncertain, intense final campaign stretch. Both lawmakers said the candidates and their supporters deserve to feel confident in the agency charged with safeguarding the country's democracy from political violence. Raskin said that both parties were united in their bafflement and outrage over the stunning failures that led to the shooting. He lamented the extraordinary communications gap between Cheadle and Congress during the hearing. And as we said that the Secret Service director has resigned after the Trump assassination attempt. That had to, right? Didn't you think at the end, Judy, yesterday it was going to happen?
Inevitable. This reminded me of being a reporter when you ask a question and you don't get an answer, and you ask it again and you don't get an answer, and you ask it again and you don't get an answer. I thought at some point she was going to offer at least some modicum of an explanation about why she wasn't answering these basic questions, and she just didn't. It was a grueling day on Capitol Hill, and inevitable. I still think there must have been a reason she wasn't answering questions that she's answered in public to news organizations. This is and it's not like Congress doesn't have a right to know this, because they do.
We saw him with a scope. Isn't that, concerning? Well, that's suspicious. That isn't that isn't actually a threat. When you saw him with a scope on the roof, did you think maybe that was a threat? And you know, you laugh about it, but I mean, they were getting, the committee members were getting annoyed, obviously, and rightfully so. And as you said, Judy, just no answers coming about. Jay.
The phrase that just keeps churning over and over in my head every time I start to parse all this and think about, well, you know, is she ultimately responsible? And, you know, should she be the one to guide the investigation in her own agency? So the phrase I keep coming back to is, you had one job. And,
right.
You know, you can come real close to a thing like this and have it not happen and keep your job. But once you've actually, you know, somebody has wounded a political candidate, much less a former president of the United States, you just can't stay in the job. You're ultimately responsible for this. And yes, I think her obtuseness and opacity were just intolerable. And I don't think what's interesting about this, you know, just having watched the dynamics in Congress lately, I can't say that Republicans would have circled the wagons on this if the situation was reversed and it was a Republican administration. But you know, the fact that they didn't, I think, was just the reality of it. The Democrats could not defend her. You can't defend somebody and say, well, you know, it was an almost assassination. You know, it would just look too partisan to do that. So this was inevitable. She finally did it, and we'll see where the investigation goes. Hopefully it will be, and it seems like this bipartisanship on this particular issue is a moment when everybody says, yeah, we've got to get this right. We really need to know what's wrong.
Mark?
Joe, I don't think there's any malice here. I think this will get sorted out. I think she should have resigned, just like the Uvalde law enforcement authorities. You know, their letters of resignation should have been on the appropriate desk the next morning. The Secret Service has a budget of $3 billion. Just to put that in perspective, the Economist mentioned that is half of the New York City Police Department's budget. That budget's going to go up. There's going to be more measures to protect political appointees and their families against these high-powered rifles and the people who know or sort of know how to use them. And the rest of us are going to be left to our own wits.
You know, she had 9 days to gather this information. And I heard that repeatedly from members of the committee. You've had 9 days. What have you been doing? Who have you been talking to? It seems like 9 days is more than a reasonable amount of time to get the basic information together. Again, maybe there's something we don't know at this point, but I'm not seeing it.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I want to kind of take this from the 50,000 foot view, because I personally don't have enough data about, you know, was this a mistake? Is she doing a great job? What happened? I don't really know. It certainly is not good when something like this happens. Nobody should feel like they're going about their life and they're subject to this kind of stuff. But the thing that makes me really sad is that we're in an environment where one mistake can cost you your job. We don't just see that with her. We see that with a lot of people. A bad performance can cost you your job. I mean, in some sense, that's when the heat really turned up on Biden, despite the fact that he's had these infirmities for a really, really long time. The political climate can cost you your job. You know, it looks bad for Democrats to say, yeah, this was okay. Then it looks like we're being partisan. And the other thing I think nobody thinks about is the minute you hand in your letter of resignation, whatever thing you're leading kind of takes 4 steps back. Who's going to lead it? What's going to happen? Who are the next people? Who will actually get stuff done in the absence of the known leader? Sometimes you get a better leader, but there's always a period of adjustment. And so the aftermath is nothing to sneeze at, especially now that we have extra people to guard. We have extra presidential candidates. We have extra vice presidential candidates. So the whole thing, I don't know the answer. I don't know whether she should have resigned or not. I don't have enough information to say that, but she's been bullied into a resignation. I'm not excited about that. This notion that if you're in public life or private life and you make one mistake, some of these mistakes should be fatal. I'm not saying that they shouldn't, but all mistakes shouldn't be fatal because it's just too high a bar. People make mistakes. Organizations make mistakes.
I mean, that point that was made earlier, though, about, you know, you had one job. And the other part of this that I take to heart, and I understand there are great concerns over the financials for the agencies and also what was given to local law enforcement versus what was given to the Secret Service. However, at the end of the day, it's still the Secret Service who is responsible for securing that area. And obviously a huge mistake was made. And it seems as though whether, you know, that happens today, tomorrow, or in 2 weeks, I mean, it had to, you have to, especially since you're still running the agency, right? I mean, if all the candidates were going to stay home for 6 months and you could kind of get your act together, then yeah. But otherwise, I don't know what exactly you can do.
Joe, before she was the head of the Secret Service, she worked for PepsiCo, which owned Fritos, which owned Doritos. And one of the congressmen, Pat Fallon, told her, just go back to guarding Doritos, lady.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, that's funny, but that's so unprofessional.
I disagree.
Right? It's not the discourse we want in public life.
Fran, I disagree. I think if you fail your job that miserably, and when you talk about fatal mistakes, that almost was a fatal mistake.
Well, it was a fatal mistake.
And part of your job is to take responsibility for the entire organization. Sometimes you resign in honor when it's not your direct fault. That's part of the job. That's what it means to lead a group of people. And if you want to see organizations that don't miss a stride when leaders are gone, come work with me in finance where turnover is rampant. And there are plenty of capable people, perfectly willing and able in almost every case I've seen to step up. And if the government doesn't have that aligned, then it needs to get its act together.
The president is the one person who thinks should be safe from getting shot.
I wish I had enough economic knowledge to come work with you. That would be so cool.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, we only have we only have 30 seconds, but I just want to say you know, obviously much more will come, but I do think it's also worth noting that this is an agency that has been in turbulence for a very long time, going back to the Obama administration. So if there's time now to take a systemic look from bottom to top, that's good, I think. We're going to break. I want to thank everybody who is here. Thank you for being so great. We'll be back right after this.